Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Somewhere in the last few days, phone rang. And then another one. And many more after that. Seven families, people who have spent years living inside a grief that most of us will never fully understand. Thank your lucky stars. Got a call telling them that the man accused of taking something very precious from them is expected to walk into the Suffolk County courtroom and say a word he's refused to say for at least 3 years. Guilty. Rex Heuermann, the Long Island serial killer, the Gilgo Beach killer, at least one of them. As we know, there's more than one out there. One of them, the 62-year-old Long Island architect, the suburban commuter, the husband, the father, is expected to change his plea. According to multiple sources familiar with the case, confirmed by the Associated Press, NBC, CNN, Fox News, and nearly every major outlet covering the story, Heuermann has agreed to plead guilty to the murders of seven women. The families have been notified. His own family has been notified. The September trial, the one that was supposed to put everything in front of a jury, is probably not going to happen. I want you to sit with something before we go anywhere else. His daughter, his own daughter, remember, Victoria, has said publicly that she believes her father is most likely the Gilgo Beach serial killer. She's kind of come around to it. So, yeah, if you watch the doc that Fitty put out, and his ex-wife, Asa Elrup, who filed for divorce days after his arrest, later appeared in documentaries and called him a hero. And it was, you know, we got the divorce to protect the assets so, you know, nobody can get their hands on them, you know, all that. She said she'd fallen in love with him all over again. Two people who lived in the same house, ate at the same table. One says he probably did it. One calls him a hero. I wonder what she's feeling right now. And I don't wish this on anyone. I'm not sitting here gloating like, ha ha, your husband's a killer. Ha, what do you think now? No, I mean, this is someone who was trying to survive. This is someone who's trying to make sense of this insanity in her mind. And I challenge any one of us. If you really, truly believe that your partner could not possibly be this monster, even though the signs were kind of there, people can live in their own ignorance. People can, and I'm not saying that in an, I'm not trying to say it in an insulting way. I don't know how you say ignorance in a non-insulting way, but I'm trying not to. Delusions. Cognitive distortions. That's the word we should be going with. Cognitive distortions. Or willful ignorance. So at some point, you got to wake up and be a grown-up. And take responsibility and accept that maybe the fairy tale life that you thought you had walked into is not so much. And just because you dig your feet in 500 meters and you go, every time I go away, it's okay. You don't go on vacation with us. It's okay. You just, you know, it's totally fine. We live this weirdly separate life and you have a weird lair in the basement. And I'm just going to shut my eyes and close my ears and not look and pretend I don't know anything. So I don't see anything. I won't know anything. I mean, there's a level of, yeah, to that too. doesn't mean you're guilty of being involved in all of that. I really don't think she was. But Asa really is an interesting case study in willful ignorance. Really is. In a non... intentionally combative, holding back information sort of way. The two can be in the same conversation and run parallel. And I know it seems weird because it feels like they couldn't be, but I think they can be in this case. And I've run that through my mind a lot. And trust me, they've looked into them. They've looked at the digital evidence. This is a case that the digging has been done. It's not like, oh, he's pleading guilty. Now suddenly, oh, well, looks like they had something. No, they've looked. If there was anything to be had there, trust me, they would have, she'd be in jail by now. And she's not. So that is what that is. She's got the news too, and she's going to have to square that up in her mind. If she squares it up. Some people don't. Some people will forever, even when the one person admits it, like, nope, I don't believe it. You see it in cults all the time. And if we really look at this super microscopically, Huerman was kind of running a bit of a cult of himself with his family. He had them believing one totally different version of himself than anyone else, and they believed it. They ate it up. Kind of culty. And to hold on to that allegiance as long as they have, at least she has. I mean, it's quite a feat. So I'm not faulting her. But she is an interesting study, and it's a study, and I think people do this a lot, don't even realize it. Then it's not as evident as this either. Both of them are living inside this thing, and the gap between where they've landed tells you everything about how invisible this man allegedly managed to be for 17 years to the people closest to him. That's the story. That's what lives at the center of this case, and we're going to go through all of it. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to dig in. Press subscribe on YouTube or Substack so you don't miss any of our conversations here. And there's going to be probably quite a few on this case in the coming weeks now that this has dropped. Remember when Koberger suddenly, hey guys, guess what? I did it. Yeah, we're about to do that same thing with this case. This one has a lot more murders to it. So let's go back to the beginning. If you've been following since the start, you know how long this road has been. If you're coming in fresh, you need to understand what we're actually talking about. In December of 2010, Suffolk County Police were searching for a woman named Shannon Gilbert, who had vanished after a frantic 911 call in which she said someone was chasing her. They didn't find Shannon on that first search. What they found instead were bodies. 10 of them along a desolate stretch of Ocean Parkway near Gilgo Beach on Long Island's southern shore, wrapped in burlap, left in the brush, just yards from a road thousands of people drove every single day. Four of those victims became known as the Gilgo Four: Melissa Bartholomew, who was 24, Megan Waterman, who was 22, Amberlyn Costello, 27, Maureen Brainerd Barnes, 25, all young women, all involved in S work. All found wrapped and discarded. Their deaths went cold. Years passed. Police leadership, well, it was corrupt as shit, and then it changed. The dead ends piled up and the families waited. It wasn't until 2022 that a newly formed task force reignited the investigation, and within weeks, a name surfaced. Amazing what happens when you put your mind to it. Rex. A New York State investigator pulled it from a database. From that point, they launched more than 300 subpoenas and search warrants, building a case around a man who looked on the surface like absolutely nobody worth noticing. Huerman ran an architecture firm in Manhattan. He lived in Massapequa Park, Nassau County. He walked to the train every morning in a suit, carried a briefcase. He had a wife and two kids. He was, by every external measure, really, you know, unremarkable when you're talking about potential serial killers. Which is, of course, exactly how he allegedly operated for 17 years in plain sight, while seven women never made it home. And those are just the ones attributed to him. Are there going to be more? Well, trust me, there's always room for more with a character like this. I think there might be a reasoning to him taking this plea deal right now. I don't even know if it is a plea deal. He's pleading guilty. The judge has to accept it, number one. But I think there may be some thought process there. Let's wrap this show up. Not that it truly does wrap it up. I mean, the investigation into other unsolved murders will continue on. There just might be slightly less weight on that if the trial of Rex Heuermann is not going to take place for these seven. Again, not to say they couldn't find a few more. The evidence assembled against Heuermann is one of the most comprehensive cases that has been out there. It didn't come from one stroke of luck. It came from building fact upon fact until there was no air left between them. It started with a truck. A witness reported seeing a green Chevrolet Avalanche near Amber Costello's last known location before she disappeared. That vehicle was registered to Rex Heuermann. Investigators locked in. Then came the pizza crust. In January 23, while surveilling Heuermann, investigators retrieved a discarded pizza crust from a trash can outside his Manhattan office. The DNA matched a hair found on the body of one of the victims. That's the moment the walls kind of started closing in. Cell phone records placed him in contact with the victim shortly before their disappearances. But there's a layer to this that's even more disturbing than it first sounds. According to court filings, Heuermann allegedly registered burner phones under fake names. Andrew Roberts, Thomas Hawk, and created a Tinder account under those names and those aliases to contact S workers. He allegedly reached out to at least 60 women more than 500 times in the years before his arrest. One of those burner phones was in his pocket when they arrested him. And prosecutors say he was still making contact with S workers even after investigators had already identified him as a suspect in 2022. He knew, or at least had reason to believe, that someone was watching. And according to the evidence, he just kept going anyway. Is that an addiction? It's a good question for Siobhan, isn't it? Can serial killing, essentially, can that be a form of addiction? I'm going to ask her that this week. It gets worse. That same Gmail account he used for contacts was also used to conduct thousands of searches for violent material. Content investigators described in court documents as related to torture, restraint, and the physical suffering of women. And from that same account, he allegedly ran more than 100 searches about the Gilgo Beach investigation itself. One of those searches pulled directly from court records was, why hasn't the Long Island serial killer been caught? He was searching for himself, watching the investigation, trying to find him from his home while his family was in the house. And then there were the devices. Investigators seized more than 350 electronic items from his Massapequa Park home, 27 computers, 58 internal hard drives, 22 external hard drives, 46 cell phones. Nothing weird going on here, honey. Behind my 46 cell phones, the DA's office has said they are still working through some of them. What they found early on was enough to make the district attorney say he had never seen anything like this in his career. Buried on a hard drive in Heuermann's basement, one he had allegedly tried to wipe, was a Microsoft Word document created in 2000, updated over several years, written entirely in capital letters. It was to put it lightly, a murder manual. It had sections in it titled Supplies, Problems, Body Prep, Post-Event, Instructions for Packaging Remains for Transport, Notes on Limiting Noise, Notes on Removing Identifying Marks, Tattoos specifically, because a tattoo on one victim's torso had been mutilated with a sharp object, a Things to Remember section that documented lessons allegedly taken from previous incidents, including a note that lighter rope broke under pressure and heavier rope should be used instead. Aisle 6A at the Home Depot. He tried to delete it. They found it anyway. The DA said he had never seen a document like it in his life. Criminologists drew direct comparisons to BTK, the church-going married Cub Scout leader, who kept a similar kind of operational record in Wichita, Kansas, and who was eventually undone by evidence he thought he'd destroyed, too. It was technology that had failed both of them, and their own ignorance to time marching on beyond the ways they'd always done their shit. Hiram was an architect. According to prosecutors, he blueprinted murder the same way he blueprinted buildings. Brain works one way, doesn't it? I mean, it really shows, like, well, you could be an architect or a serial killer. You're like, what are the two? I mean, there's so many cases where we hear about, gosh, if only they use that knowledge, that brain power, that energy towards something good. Imagine what they could create. Hiraman kind of did. He was a successful architect. I mean, you wouldn't get it looking at his house. It looks like he's living in squalor. But some people are, you know, just really hoarder types. And they don't bother them one bit. Just like the stuff he did to the women, allegedly. But he's one who really, he wasn't just some loner doing nothing and failed at everything. I mean, he was a successful architect. He did put the pedal to the metal over in a productive lane and did all this other stuff over here too with the pedal to the metal there. And that's how he got away with it for decades, because no one went and said, if only he used that energy for something else positive. He was. So when you're doing all the positive over here, you're living this life. You have an architecture firm in Manhattan, one of the most expensive real estate markets on the planet. A lot of people aren't going to go and look the other way if you're like, oh, he's got it going on. He's not going to have time to go do all that. Sometimes they do. One more detail. When Hiraman was arrested outside his Manhattan office and transported to police headquarters, an officer mentioned that a $6,000 watch he'd asked about was not among his personal property at the courthouse. His response, according to court documents, I guess I won't be needing that. They noted it on the prisoner log that he was calm. He was given French fries, onion rings, crackers, and a Coke while they processed him. Calm, cooperative, unremarkable, right to the very end. Let's talk about the family, because this is the layer of this case that cuts the deepest. The DNA evidence recovered from 5 of the 7 victims wasn't only linked to Hiraman. It was linked to members of his family. His wife's hair, his daughter's hair, transferred onto the bodies of these women through items from inside the family home, tape, belts, bags, a surgical drape. Prosecutors and investigators have been consistent throughout this case. They do not believe Asa Elrip or her children had any knowledge of the involvement in the case or the crimes. They are not accused of anything. Investigators believe the murders were committed when the family was out of town, but their DNA was on the bodies. And that detail doesn't get any easier to sit with, no matter how many times you read it or how many times you say, well, they were out of town or this or that. But if you look at their home and understand the hoarding type situation there, and if you're still kind of like, well, what about that? Go watch an episode of Hoarders for me. Seriously. Go watch an episode of Hoarders and tell me if you feel the same way at the end. If you go, and put yourself, sorry, allergies, put yourself in the situation of being in that house. Let's just say it's Uncle Rex and Aunt Asa, just theoretically here. You can stay with us. You don't know how bad of a hoarding situation it is. Picture yourself Oh, okay, I'm going to come visit. You don't know that he's that guy. Look at a hoarder episode and then go, okay, if you stayed in that house for a week, don't argue and say, oh, I wouldn't do that. Let's just say you did. Let's say you found yourself a little nook behind the stacks of shit. Oh, here's a nice little mattress over here for me. Let's just say you did that and you stayed there for a week. Lived life. The odds of your material, like hair or something, being on other objects in that house are incredibly high. You just go through the place. You're going to brush against things. Things are going to, I mean, and now consider people who live in that type of squalor and think it's normal because they're so conditioned to it. There's going to be human material on everything. And look, you don't have to be a hoarder situation to have a roll of duct tape in your house and have other people's hair on it. You have one like in your junk drawer? Duct tape? You ever take the, like, find a roll of tape from the junk drawer that's been back there for like years and you pull it out and you're like, oh God, like what's all this stuff on the sides? I haven't used this because it collects. Every time somebody goes in there to grab something, material gets on it. And if there's a hair that falls, like, look, there's very explainable ways for it. Not to say that that shouldn't be investigated or hasn't already been. It has. Because trust me, they looked at it and they said, what's going on here? But they did, and they looked, and they didn't find a connection. His ex-wife filed for divorce days after his arrest. That was back in July of 23. Their divorce was finalized in March of 25, but in a documentary on Peacock last year, the Fitty one, Elwrup appeared on camera and called Hiraman her hero. She said she had fallen in love with him all over again. And basically, he kind of played the rescue role. The rescue role from someone who, I'm somewhat paraphrasing here, I don't remember her exact language, who was not in the greatest place in life, who needed someone or something or the strength to carry on in a positive way. She kind of had a track record of not being with the best folks. And she continued that on, but she thought she was a good guy for a while. But again, you got to kind of understand the psychology of it. When you're so desperately wanting and believing that someone is going to be good because you've been wrong so many ways, you look the other way a lot faster than you might otherwise. If this person is being 80% good to you, 90%, I mean, Rex may have been 100% good to her. He just said, look the other way quite a bit, and she did. Others may go, why? You're being great to me, but why do I have to constantly look the other way? But if you are just happy you're not being abused or whatever, I mean, it's like, I know he was cheating. It was I get that. I don't think she was aware. And if you're not aware and you so desperately are going to cling to the only semblance of someone caring about you that you've ever had, and he treats you well, you may look the other way. People do it all the time. His daughter, Victoria, who had worked at his Manhattan architecture firm before his arrest and struggled to find work afterward, appeared in the same documentary and said something very different. She said she was mentally preparing herself for the ultimate outcome. She visited him in jail, said he seemed exactly like her dad, like himself, which she said made it harder, not easier. She believes he most likely did it. He's still her father. She hates what he may have done. She still loves him. Both of those things are true, and she is living inside both of them simultaneously. That is such a precarious situation for a brain to be in that I think unless you're there, none of us can truly judge or understand. I don't know what to do with it, but I think it tells you something about how these cases actually work. One more thing worth noting, because it matters to how we understand the integrity of this investigation. Hiraman was alleged at one point to have been connected to an eighth victim, a woman named Colleen McNamee. That allegation came from convicted killer John Bitterolf, who was currently serving time for McNamee's murder and another woman's. In November 2025, DNA testing cleared Heuermann of any connection to McNamee's death entirely. He was excluded. The science said no prosecutors and investigators didn't try to hold on to that charge. They let the evidence lead where it led. That matters when you're assessing the strength of the seven charges that remain. And his defense, for what it's worth, was publicly saying as recently as March that they were planning for a trial, not a plea. 178-page ominous motion was filed in January, challenging multiple categories of evidence. The defense was fighting, and then within weeks of that filing, the phone calls went out to the families. A guilty plea. And if it's formally entered, we'll not answer every question this case has raised. John Ray, the attorney representing Valerie Mack's son, said his client is cautiously awaiting the facts. There will be no trial, no public presentation of the full evidence, no moment where every piece of the blueprint document is read aloud before a jury with the families present. What they'll get is a sentencing proceeding. And according to sources familiar with the matter, a sentence of life without the possibility of parole. That outcome was negotiated. He arrived at it through a legal process, and he and his attorneys chose to engage. The families didn't choose a timeline. They never got to choose anything. The investigation isn't finished. There's still 11 sets of remains found in 2010 and 2011 along Ocean Parkway and the surrounding areas. Heuermann is charged with seven. A man named Andrew Dykes was separately arrested and charged in connection with another of those victims, Tanya Denise Jackson, known for years only as Peaches. That case is proceeding in Nassau County on its own track. The others remain open. DA Ray Tierney has said plainly, we are not going to stop. We can't stop. We owe that to the victims. The April 8th hearing is scheduled. The plea must still be accepted by the judge. It could still fall through. Nothing is final until he stands in that courtroom and says it himself. Sandra Costello was 28 years old when she was allegedly killed in 1993. Valerie Mack was 24 when she disappeared in 2000. Jessica Taylor was 20 years old in 2003. These are real women with families who spent years not knowing, and then years knowing and waiting, and then years watching a court process grind forward while the man accused of ending their lives said over and over again, not guilty. He built buildings for a living. He allegedly built a system for murder and kept refining it for years. He walked to the train every morning, came home at night, and sat down to dinner with his family. He used fake names to hunt his victims. He searched online to see how close investigators were getting, and when they finally caught him outside his Manhattan office, he asked about his watch. A guilty plea closes the legal chapter. What it doesn't close is a lot harder to name, but those families got a phone call this last week, and at the end of that call, someone told them it was almost over. After everything they've carried, I hope that means something real. Again, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. Please do join us there. All right. Press subscribe. We'll continue the conversation in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.